The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, and it's a Wednesday. Not just any Wednesday. It's the day before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving Eve, as it were. So, happy Thanksgiving to you. You know, I think back, I've been doing a lot of reflection of late, just because, you know, at these even numbered ended years, I look back and, you know, 20 years ago, I was in Kazakhstan adopting my daughter. 30 years ago today, I was producing what would become the number one rated morning show, radio show in Los Angeles. I worked with Mark and Brian, and we did these day before Thanksgiving Day parades. Seriously, we would do it in between. There's like a kind of a road in between the Los Angeles Coliseum and the LA Sports Arena, which were situated right next to each other. But there was like a roadway that went around them, and we would put on this massive parade, do it live on the radio from 6 to 10 a.m. and have thousands of people show up. It really was remarkable. I know there are some videos floating around on YouTube. Maybe if I get ambitious this weekend, I'll try to find one and post it so you could see. It was craziness. It was fun. It was silly. And there are days that I really miss that. You know, so I did the silly morning show thing, right? I did the music radio thing for years, and I've done this. I am using YouTube today. We're on YouTube, are we not? Is YouTube is going. Why is someone in the chat room saying not? Oh, I didn't update the page on the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com. That's my fault. I'm a multitasker. I'll do it while I'm talking. That's always dangerous when I try to do that, but I will attempt it. I will attempt it. We are on YouTube today as well. Anyway, so you know, I've been doing a lot of reflecting lately, and there are days that I honestly would love to be able to play music on the radio for you. And tomorrow for Thanksgiving, that's just what I'll do, except I can't play music on the YouTube. So tomorrow will be an audio only show. So those of you regular YouTubers, tomorrow, one of two things. Or one of three things, actually. You can either come over to the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com. I've got players there. Or you can go to NicoleSandlerStream.com. That'll just bring up the audio feed of this show. I have a stream going. When I'm not on the air, I rebroadcast the Progressive Voices Network, as long as my computer is not down or their stream isn't down. But you can always get it there. Or you can listen to the Progressive Voices app, because the show will be on Progressive Voices as well. But tomorrow will be fun. Songs of gratitude, you know, songs that fit the Thanksgiving theme. And, you know, I think that we also deserve a bit of, a special Thanksgiving treat. Because it's been a while. I don't know where you live. Maybe you have decent over-the-air radio, but where I live, no. And back in the day, every Thanksgiving, it was a tradition, we'd play Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant, the Thanksgiving Day Massacre. So, this show runs from 5 to 6 Eastern. I figure right around 6 o'clock, maybe people will be sitting down to eat. So I will end the show with that tomorrow if you want to tune in for it. All right. I'll also podcast it. So if you get the podcast, you can have it even earlier. Oh, no, maybe not. I might be doing it live. Never mind. Listen live, and then you can get the podcast later. Regardless, that's what we'll be doing tomorrow. As for Friday, I'm not sure. Either it'll be a best of or something. I haven't figured out yet what I'm going to do. And I guess it depends on how today goes, because I have two interviews recorded that I could share with you today. Day before Thanksgiving is always a difficult day to get guests because people are, well, used to be traveling. This year, all bets are off. Everything is FUBAR. In fact, we've got some FUBAR breaking news. You want to hear it? Just less than an hour ago, Donald Trump tweeted, "It is my great honor to announce that General Michael T. Flynn has been granted a full pardon. Congratulations, at Jen Flynn and his wonderful family. I know you will now have a truly fantastic Thanksgiving." Okay, a couple things here. Michael Flynn twice, not just once, but twice pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Donald Trump rewards him with a pardon. Welcome to Opposite World. Then John Santucci from ABC News tweeted, "Sources have told ABC News this could be the beginning of a pattern for the next few weeks. Rather than drop a ton of pardons all at once, and a chunk at the end might still happen, we can expect this president to sprinkle pardons to his allies and friends as he sees fit." Lovely. Now, there's a lot of speculation on the Twitter machines about what this Michael Flynn pardon means. Marcy Wheeler, who is my authority on all kinds of stuff, she is warning this. She retweeted something from Kyle Chaney, who works for NBC, who said, "We don't know yet precisely what crimes Trump pardoned Flynn for." You see, there are a lot of charges against Michael Flynn. So depending on the charges that he's pardoning him for, there could still be some Michael Flynn business before the court, before Judge Sullivan, who has been the judge on Michael Flynn's cases. Marcy Wheeler said, "Until you know how Trump worded the pardon, you have zero clue whether Sullivan is done." And he's not done with the Department of Justice's altering of documents. So this episode might not be over yet. And then again, it might. And all I know is that I really, 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 really hope that the attorneys general of various states, starting with New York's Letitia James, have their indictments ready to go. At least the arrest warrants, you know. There's plenty to get this crime family on. So that happened today. Donald Trump was also planning to fly down to Pennsylvania for what he called a hearing. It was not a hearing at all. It was something at a Wyndham Hotel. Now, it wasn't the Four Seasons landscaping. They made it look like an official hearing room, complete with the, you know, the folded name tents on the table in front of, I want to call her Orly Tates now. What's her name? Sydney, whatever. Is that Sydney? No, that's not Sydney. Sydney's the other one. Jenna Ellis. God, all the nut jobs are just melding together in my mind. Jenna Ellis, brain surgeon that she is, and Rudy Giuliani. Again, the man who's been exposed to COVID. Why is he out there? And he was maskless at this not a hearing. So, at this not a hearing, Donald Trump was ready to go. He insisted he was going. And then at the last minute, it was canceled. Only his trip was canceled. But Jenna Ellis got him on her cell phone. I kid you not. And she held the cell phone up to the microphone. I'll just play for you like a few seconds of the nonsense. Do I have it here? Here it is. That he was spouting on this call. Here's a little bit. I didn't even edit these clips. I just recorded them. It's like, I'm never going to use these. So just to give you an idea of what was said.
The show was on this morning on a important show.
An important show.
No way Trump didn't win Pennsylvania because the energy industry was all for him. I saw, you know, with my eyes what happened.
Okay. I want you to know he's quoting a quote, important official on an important morning show. Doesn't sound like anyone was under oath, and it sounds like an anonymous source to me. Fake news. And he's giving anecdotal, I hate to use the word evidence with anecdotal. He's telling stories. Somebody saw something and said something. You lost in Pennsylvania by, I don't have the numbers in front of me, more than 100,000 votes. This is insane. The only thing this man is trying to do is to delegitimize the government in the eyes of his supporters, who are batshit crazy to begin with. And I know, look, then Joe Biden made a speech today. And you go from batshit crazy Donald Trump to very sober and serious Joe Biden. And in his Thanksgiving address, Joe Biden, the president-elect, said Americans were at war with the virus, not with one another. Agree with that. And he urged perseverance. And he urged, you know, we should try to get along. Can I ask you a question? You know, and everyone, all the righties and even the never Trumpers are saying that Joe Biden needs to extend an olive branch. He needs to reach out to the right, to the Trump voters who are feeling so upset and let down. Let's go back 4 years. Remember how you were feeling? November 9th? Or was it 8th? November 9th. I think Election Day was the 8th. Do you remember how you felt? I remember how I felt for at least 2 years. I was walking around in a daze, in a deep depression. I barely could put one foot in front of the other. I think I hit it fairly well here. And to those of you who stuck with me through that time, I really appreciate it because, you know, I was not having an easy time of it. And I don't recall anybody from the Trump administration ever making overtures to, you know, extend an olive branch, to extend a hand of friendship for a Democrat to be in Trump's cabinet. Can you imagine? No, because from the get-go, if you are a Democrat, if you voted against him, you're an enemy. Donald Trump never once said he's the president for all the people, even those who didn't vote for him. Donald Trump's attitude was, if you didn't vote for me, you get nothing and be happy with it. You're the enemy. If you live in a Democrat state, we're going to take funding from you. That's how he treated us for the last 4 years. We were, I mean, he said it about the press, but he said it about Democrats, too. Basically, we were the enemy of the people. We were not true Americans. And now all of a sudden we're supposed to, oh, they feel bad because they lost? Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. In fact, you know, none of it works that way. There's a lot of blame to go around. And there's blame on the Democrat side, too, but for different things. I don't feel any obligation to be nice to a Trumper, to tell the Republicans, come on, we're all one big happy family, because we're not. When I see Mitch McConnell allow a Joe Biden judicial nomination to be brought up for a vote, then maybe we can talk. When I see Mitch McConnell allow Joe Biden to appoint a Supreme Court justice, if he remains. Look, we got to get out. We people in Georgia, you got to vote before or on January 5th, because the Democrats need to take those two Senate seats away from Kelly Loeffler and, oh my God, but the other guy, Perdue. Perdue is in the news today for some other crime. These people are all crooked. They're all just really bad, 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 bad people. I try not to sully my mind with too much, but I don't know where the Perdue story is, but it's out there today. He was implicated in another big scandal where he's bilking the American people out of money. Neither Loeffler nor Perdue deserve to be in the U.S. Senate. On the other hand, Reverend Warnock does, and John Ossoff over Kelly Loeffler, no contest. And if we elect those two, or I should say if Georgia does, then the Democrats will have 50 seats and the Republicans will have 50 seats. And in that instance, the vice president becomes the tiebreaker. That would be Kamala Harris. She's a Democrat. That would give the Democrats the majority in the U.S. Senate, the thinnest of majorities. But at least we'd be able to get some work done. Because make no mistake about it, if we do not, if Democrats do not take control of the Senate, Mitch McConnell is going to keep up his obstructive practices that he saddled the Obama administration with. So you know all that. Somebody, and I didn't get this woman's name, but we've had parody songs from her before. She records them. I think she's the one who did Time After Time, and now this news, I guess, produces it and puts it out. So I just found this. She did it about a month ago. I will try to find her name and share it with you. But this is posted at Now This News. I will I'll post it on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com. But she places the blame pretty nicely. So let's hear. Let's hear the song. I don't know her name. Take it away, wonderful singer. Here we go.
Michael Cohen, Nikki Haye, Robert Mueller, much we'll never know. Jared Kushner, Nerf Spray, Charlottesville, Kurtz Betray, narcissism, nepotism, never quit for a world. Jeff Sessions, golf binges, Rudy G, off the hinges, Ukraine, morals, Mexico, Bayesian, jail time, xenophobe, freaking out the Russia probe, John Bolton, virus bots, grabbing women by the cross. Social files, Puerto Rico throwing towels, Devin Nunes, Kristen Nielsen, kids in a box. Heel Spurs didn't serve, Kelly Conway, what a nerd. Vladdy Putin, Rick Gates, only news from Fox. Con Man Huckabee, himself serving charity. Omarosa, Moscow witch, Hillary, supposed witch. Chaos, constant gaps, Michael Flynn, you and Les. All fake news, serious news, his pathetic racist views. Now his pants are on fire. All that cash, Gordon's on the market crash. Who's to blame? Bankruptcy is handing out a chandelier. Sick of that hotel bill, bingo's always in the till. Kavanaugh, John Kelly, separating family. It's Edith Voss, brain drain, Scott Pruitt, John McCain, James Mattis, Bronx cheer, Obamacare still here. Dan Coates, Michael Flynn, felon pardon, king of sin. Proud boys, gay fear, feeling like the end is near. Was it too much to ask for you to wear a mask? Now he flaunts that virus. Chloroquine injected, still he got infected. John Brennan, Mike Pence, Russian interference. Hot air, huge pair, Kim Jong-un, a love affair. Sermon, Berman, Epstein, lower, pandemic, Dino Mare. Travel ban, COVID rages, photo signing, empty pages. James Cone, Christian's faint, no surprise, the swamp's not drained. Impeach, crowd size, lock her up with fire. The list is very long, might need another song. Preaching to the choir. I'm just a nasty woman fighting ghastly conmen. U.S. disrespecting SNL, resurrected Lewis and Ginsburg gone. We're just trying to carry on. Walter Reed, free press, nation's now an awful mess. Scaramucci, Lindsey Graham, Texas proved that you're a sham. Junior's hunting leopard meat, $1 trillion deficit. Dems need a Senate seat, and I can't handle.
Lying and lying and lying. Her name is Jen Houston. That's it. All right. And so we can find that through Now This News. Her name is Jen Houston. They put it finally at the end in the credits because they didn't have it at the beginning. And she's the same one who did a great parody some months back of Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time. Good stuff. And oh, my God, that's like Donald Trump's entire administration in under 4 minutes. And I can't wait to forget all of that stuff. All right. So let's do this. This morning, spoke to Ari Berman. You know Ari Berman. He's been on this program many times through the years. I hadn't spoken to him throughout the entirety of this election season. These days, he is writing for, hold on, I'm looking for, oh, there it is, for Mother Jones Magazine. He's the author of Give Us the Ballot. But you know what? I say all this in the interview. So we just recorded this at 11 this morning. It's obviously still relevant now. So let's go, as they say, to the videotape. Us on the line is Ari Berman. He's a senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights. He's also the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Ari, I'm amazed it's been so long since we've spoken because we just went through a major election and I don't know how I didn't have you on the show during that, but I'm thrilled that you joined us today for a bit of a, you know, post-mortem on what happened. So the votes have pretty much been counted. We now know that when it's all said and done, the final vote tally will be about 158 million. That's 20 million more than the record-breaking in 2016 of 137 million. Turnout is estimated to be 66.5% of eligible voters. That's the highest since 1900 and pretty huge. But to put it in perspective, how does that compare with the rest of the world?
It compares very low to the rest of the world, Nicole, and I don't think anyone's going to be emulating our elections anytime soon. From the difficulty that people had voting before the election, during the election, all of the obstacles that voters faced, attempts, for example, to make it much harder to vote by mail, to close polling places, to sabotage the post office. Then Election Day itself actually went fairly smoothly, all things considered. But then afterwards, it was just a complete mess where it took a long time to count the votes, largely because Republican state legislatures in places like Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania did not give election officials time before the election to count ballots, unlike Florida, for example, which, of course, was done counting on election night, basically, because their laws are different. And then the fact that Donald Trump basically for 3 weeks tried to launch a coup to overturn the results. And it didn't succeed, but he's done a tremendous amount of damage. He's convinced virtually all of his supporters that there was widespread fraud when there wasn't. He's filed all of these frivolous lawsuits that luckily haven't succeeded, but you can imagine a different world where it was closer, the evidence was stronger, where he might have succeeded. They tried to convince state legislatures to overturn the will of the voters. That failed, but the fact that they even trotted out such a nightmare scenario is very worrisome. And so I had a lot of nightmare scenarios in my head going into the election on election night and the days after. It didn't look like that was going to come to pass. But then all of these nightmare scenarios, one after another, trying to throw out the votes, trying to subvert the will of the people, they started emerging. And they weren't successful, but it was enough. The nightmare scenarios were enough to give those of us that cover voting rights and elections some nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like it's all over, but there's been a lot of damage in the process.
Well, it seems like it's all over because, well, the General Services Administration finally signed the ascertainment so that the transition can begin. But Donald Trump is still, you know, tweeting, I've conceded nothing, and apparently is doing some event today with Rudy Giuliani regarding the Pennsylvania vote. It's embarrassing at this point for him. But he's the one who did this. It's impossible to pull Trump out of the scenario. But just for a second, Christopher Krebs, he's the guy who was the director of CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, before Trump fired him. And Trump fired him for stating, quote, "The November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. There is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised." Do you agree with him? Was his analysis correct?
I do agree with him. And the amazing thing about all of this is, despite the pandemic, despite the fact that there were hurdles placed in front of voters at every turn, we had record turnout that we haven't seen in over 100 years.
Right.
And we had a pretty smooth process. We had record turnout during early voting. We had a very smooth election day because so many people voted early. And that really should have been the story of the election, was how many people turned out despite the barriers, how we actually pulled off a free and fair election in the middle of a pandemic when one party was trying to do everything it could to make it harder to vote. But unfortunately, the Trump campaign decided to double down on these ridiculous claims of voter fraud, and now millions and millions and millions of people believe it. And basically the entire Republican base believes that there was not a free and fair election, that it was a stolen election. That's going to make it harder to protect voting rights in the future. That's going to make it easier for Republicans to undermine voting rights in the future. And basically, these claims of a stolen election are kind of like this lost cause. Like when the Confederacy lost the Civil War, they claimed that they were, you know, fighting for a just cause all along. And I fear that that's what's happening in Republican circles right now. And the fact that so few members of Congress stepped up to denounce it, and so few Republicans in the state stepped up to announce it, is very, very concerning. And so if this remains Trump's Republican Party, which by all indications it will, we're going to hear this rhetoric a lot moving forward, and that can't be good for democracy.
No, and that's what's so frightening. So for the first time in a long time, I mean, we've been talking, you've been covering this for at least a decade, we've been talking about it that long. Our elections were not quite so secure. There was a lot of problems. And this year, again, as you said, in the midst of a global pandemic, we have this great secure election. In fact, for years now, many of us have been screaming for paper ballots, hand counted. We got some of that out of necessity. And just, you know, despite, if not for the Republicans and Donald Trump's disinformation campaign saying that, you know, mailed in ballots are, you know, fraud, wide open for fraud, this went very well. Could this be a move toward vote by mail being used more widely as we go forward?
Well, I think it probably should be, but I think Republicans are going to draw the opposite conclusions. If you were looking at the election from a scientific point of view, from an election administration point of view, you would say that, number one, a lot of people voted by mail and seem to like it. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing they might want to do even if there's not a pandemic, because it's very confusing. Because it's very convenient.
Right.
Then a lot of people voted early in person. And you would say, well, we should definitely make that permanent, too. And so you would think, based on what we saw in the election, that mail voting would become more popular and that in-person early voting would become more popular and that every state would have these kind of things. And not only that, but they would be permanent, because in many states, they were just done temporarily. So in states, for example, where you needed an excuse to get a mail ballot, they waived those requirements. Mm-hmm. Or in states that didn't have early voting, they instituted it, but only because of the pandemic. So we should have been saying, let's make these things permanent to increase voter turnout going forward. Instead, what you're going to hear from Republicans are, we need to get rid of mail voting. We need to get rid of early voting. We need to get rid of all the methods that Democrats used, even though Republican turnout was up, too. I mean, the story of the election is that turnout increased for both Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
It just increased for Democrats more in places where they won, like in Georgia. But you'd think that given that turnout increase for both parties, there could be some sensible compromises to improve mail voting, to improve early voting, and also to improve how ballots are counted so that states like Michigan and Wisconsin, Pennsylvania can count ballots like Florida does,
yeah,
which is the ballots start getting counted when they come in, and then you know the winner on election night or the day after. And, you know, Florida in 2020 went much smoother than Florida in 2000. So, you know, despite all its problems, Florida has managed to upgrade its election system. And so, I mean, we're not doing any of that. We're having the completely wrong conversation. We're having all these conversations about voter fraud that doesn't exist, as opposed to how to make our system better after learning the lessons of the pandemic.
Yeah, well, part of that, I believe, Ari Berman, is the problem with the media. And we now have like two separate avenues to go down. There's the one that, you know, regular people listen to, reading newspapers and watching TV news coverage. Then there's the other, the right-wing echo chamber, which used to just be Fox, but now appears to have said to Fox, you're telling the truth, so we're no longer going to pay attention to you. Instead, we'll go to these fringe outlets and turn them into big behemoths. And you know, Fox is losing in the ratings now to CNN and MSNBC. It's astounding, the denial of reality that's going on. And I would hope that elected officials would step up and say this is nonsense, but they're not. And that is disturbing. That seems to be the big crisis that we're facing going forward. forward. Because if, as you said, if you go by what happened, what actually happened in this election, it would be encouraging and more people, you know, state governments would say, hey, this is the way to go in the future. But I'm wondering if this all signals the turnout, the way it all went this year, maybe a move away from the Republican way of thinking, which goes back to 1980 and Paul Weyrich, who said, you know, we don't want the goo-goo syndrome, the good government syndrome. The more people vote, the less good it is for us, basically. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, because that doesn't seem to be the case right now. 80 million people voted for Joe Biden, but 74 million voted for Donald Trump, both of them breaking any previous records. So, you know, I always joke that I give grief to people who say, well, this election is going to come down to turnout. It always comes down to turnout, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it may be that in some states, Republicans are happy with high turnout, and they believe that their party can win when as many people as possible vote. I am concerned, however, that that's not going to be the lesson that's drawn in Michigan or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Georgia, that what you're going to see instead is Republicans convening in early 2021 and introducing all these methods to try to target the voting types that Democrats use. So try to target mail voting or try to target early voting. We're already hearing, for example, in Georgia, they want to have a legislative session where they add a voter ID requirement to mail ballot. So, I mean, there were no problems with mail ballots when Republicans used them. But of course, as soon as Democrats used them, it became a huge scandal. And so I'm worried that all of the conspiracy theories that we're hearing from the president are going to become weaponized. And we're going to see the weaponization of it most clearly in these state legislatures when they convene in 2021, that the coup has failed. The effort to overturn the election through legal or extra legal means has failed, but that the push to make it harder to vote is not going anywhere. And I'm afraid that in some places it's probably going to accelerate.
It's stunning. And when you think back on it, it's less than a decade ago, the Senate had voted to reconfirm the Voting Rights Act by like a 90 something to, you know, with over 90 votes in the Senate out of 100. That's no longer the case.
No, it isn't. Yeah, you're right. In 2006, the Voting Rights Act was reauthorized. And the vote was 98-0 in the Senate and 390-33 in the House. Since then, there has the consensus for voting rights has really evaporated. So we're in a perilous position. And one of the things that I was hoping was that there would be a majority in the U.S. Senate for things like restoring the Voting Rights Act. And that could still happen depending on what happens in Georgia.
Right.
But as long as Mitch McConnell is in control of the Senate, they're not going to pass any legislation to restore the Voting Rights Act. And as long as Republicans are in control of these state legislatures, it's very hard to see them passing any affirmative bills that are going to make it much easier to vote.
We're speaking with Ari Berman, of course, the author of the book, Give Us the Ballot, which if you care, and you should, about voting rights, and our vote in this country, you should read. He also covers voting and other issues for Mother Jones Magazine. A couple of minutes ago, Ari, you said something about state legislatures. And I noticed you tweeted something very important. You wrote, one thing that hasn't gotten enough attention, the election of Democratic governors, attorneys general, and secretary of states in 2018 in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin had a huge impact in 2020 by helping people vote, fighting frivolous lawsuits, and making sure votes counted and were certified. This is why state and local races are so important. I can't agree with you more. But Democrats didn't, just like we lost seats in the House, didn't pick up the Senate, Democrats didn't do well in state and local elections either. This was the year that was so important because this is the year that determines who gets to redraw the district maps going forward for the next 10 years, right?
Yeah, and I think that was probably the worst consequence for Democrats of the 2020 election. I know a lot of people focused on the losses in the House, the losses in the Senate, but I think the failure to pick up these state legislative chambers was probably the biggest failure of the Democratic Party in 2020, because now Republicans are going to be in control of the redistricting process, whether it's in Florida or Georgia or Texas or all of these states that are still under one-party control. Now, there are going to be some states that are different than 2010. Wisconsin and Pennsylvania have Democratic governors, for example. Michigan is going to have an independent redistricting commission. So Republicans aren't going to be able to gerrymander everywhere like they did in 2010, but they're going to be in control of drawing districts in many more states than Democrats will. And that's going to have a big impact, not just on these states, but also on the national level as well, because, of course, the districts that the state legislatures draw will impact who controls the House of Representatives in 2022 and beyond. And so this isn't an issue that's really getting much attention right now, but I do think the ability of Republicans to gerrymander is very, very frightening. Now, the good news is that some of the people that Democrats elected on the local level in 2018, the governors, the secretaries of state, the AGs, will act as a countervailing influence here. But I'm absolutely convinced that the elections of these Democratic officials in 2018 made a huge difference in 2020. I think it's even possible you could argue that Trump might have won Pennsylvania, won Michigan, might have won Wisconsin, had these states been controlled by Republican governors and Republican state legislatures. Because you just look at the difference, for example, in the voting laws in those states versus in Florida, for example, or in Texas, which is under one-party control. I mean, there was no one to push back against what the Republican governors were doing, or the Republican legislatures were doing. And the fact that you had the ability in Pennsylvania or Michigan to fight back against these frivolous lawsuits, to have secretaries of state that would implement measures to make it easier to vote, I think had a huge impact and hasn't really got enough attention.
Without a doubt. And sadly, I think the Democrats did a lousy job in pushing the down ballot races, especially the state and local races, because this, again, this election outcome determines who gets the census results, such as this year's census is going to turn out, and run with it with districting. And we have to live with that for the next decade. And I don't think they made those consequences clear enough. In fact, I think on a number of levels, the Democrats dropped the ball. We got rid of Trump. That's great. But the rest of it, not so much. But now we need to look forward. So, Ari Berman, we've been living with your book, Give Us the Ballot, since 2016. Thankfully, things seem to get better this year. But you got a new book on the way called Minority Rule. I think I know where you're going with that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, I'm far from finishing it because of the election, but basically I'm looking at all of the undemocratic structures of the political system and how they're manifesting themselves today. And I mean, you have to look no further than a lot of the things we're seeing right now. The fact that Joe Biden is winning the popular vote by 6 million votes and rising, but he only won Georgia by 12,000 votes. He only won Arizona by 10,000 votes. And so we were gnawing our teeth for days over very small margins in these swing states when Biden had this huge lead nationally. In the Senate, Democrats are going to win millions of more votes than Republicans.
Wow.
But right now, Republicans are in control of the body. In state legislatures, Republican candidates got fewer votes than Democrats, but will have the ability to draw districts for the next decade. We have a Supreme Court where Donald Trump, despite now losing the popular vote twice, has appointed three justices who are going to shape the court for a decade. So we still have all of these undemocratic structures, and these undemocratic structures are going to limit what Joe Biden can do. It's going to limit what the Democrats can do, both at the state and the federal level. So, I mean, we obviously dodged a huge bullet in getting rid of Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, you could really argue that the election of Joe Biden probably saved American democracy.
Yeah.
But American democracy is still very weak on a lot of other fronts. And I don't want people to become complacent here and think that everything is good just because Joe Biden is in there. Joe Biden is going to be constrained in a lot of ways. And Republicans still have all these other key levers of power, many of which they hold because of how undemocratic our institutions actually are.
Without a doubt. We are still in perilous territory here. It's like one or maybe two steps up and one step back instead of one up and two back. But we still have a long way to go. And I look forward to reading your book. We do suffer through minority rule. And it's more apparent each year that passes and just watching how Donald Trump is still attempting to steal this election and seeing how tenuous it was. It could have happened, even though, as you say, Joe Biden is leading the popular vote by 6 million. It's astounding. I call it opposite world. Nothing makes sense. Ari Berman, I know how busy you are. It's the Thanksgiving Eve, and I thank you so much for jumping on the line with us. I appreciate your work more than I let on. So let me say it now. Thank you, especially on this Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for the work you do.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Great to talk to you again.
You too. Ari Berman, he is really good. You can follow him at Mother Jones. He's on Twitter at Ari Berman. If you haven't read, Give Us the Ballot, you should. And the new one, I'm sure, will be great too. Thanks to him for jumping on with us on Thanksgiving Eve. I also recorded a conversation with Adam Green from the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. But looking at the clock, I'm not going to have time to get it in. So, looks like we'll have a new content for Friday. I don't know if I'll be on live on Friday. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment, right? Because I'll be here. Either I produce a show like a best of with some new content, or I just come in and do it live. I guess I'll figure it out before Friday. Anyway, tomorrow we will do a music show. All right. So we got that going on. I got some news and stuff that I can share with you. Should you care to weigh in on anything, you know, this is a good time to talk about things that we're grateful for. So if you care to share, the number is 954-889-6410. Or you can Skype in if you're on Skype. Simply Nicole Sandler, all one word. A few minutes ago, I was talking about, you know, the race in Georgia and Perdue, David Perdue. And I didn't have the details of what he's guilty of, the newest crime that he is accused of. Well, Judd Legume, who writes the Popular Info newsletter, he's really good. He tweeted a little thread. A tweet stream here. And he wrote, Senator David Perdue has been caught brazenly lying about how he managed his stock portfolio. Here are the facts. Perdue has said categorically that he had no input whatsoever on his stock trades as senator. This is what his spokesperson said last week. Quote, Senator Perdue doesn't manage his trades. They're handled by outside financial advisors without his prior input or approval. But according to a new report in the New York Times, the FBI obtained evidence that in January, Perdue contacted his wealth manager at Goldman Sachs and instructed him to sell $1 million worth of stock in Cardlytics, Cardlytics. The communication came after Perdue received an email from the company's CEO. And then the little insert that he includes there, it says, Mr. Perdue then contacted his wealth manager, Goldman Sachs, instructed him to sell a little more than $1 million worth of Cardlytics shares, or about 20% of his position. How much money does this guy have? One person familiar with the inquiry into Perdue's trade said the conversation was memorialized in an internal Goldman Sachs record later obtained by the FBI. Financial disclosure forms Mr. Perdue is required to file with the Senate show a January 23rd sale of $1 million to $5 million in Cardlytics stocks. Then he says, Perdue needs to explain why he lied to the public about his involvement in buying and selling stocks as senator. Why didn't he just tell the truth? What else is he hiding? And then, you know, for more information, he's plugging his newsletter, which you can sign up for at popular.info. That's John Legume. But, you know, Kelly Loeffler also has stock insider trading issues. I mean, her husband, I believe, owns the New York Stock Exchange. These people should not be in the U.S. Senate. And I understand I got my races mixed up. I guess Reverend Warnock is running against Kelly Loeffler, and John Ossoff is running against Perdue. Doesn't matter. Come on, Democrats, vote. Do it, please. Okay, other things. I guess, you know what, we're getting close to the end of the hour. Let me just start. I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to play one more quick song for you, and then we'll come back, and I will... There was a hearing today. I think I told you a little bit about it before. A hearing that wasn't really a hearing where, what's her name? The crazy woman and Rudy Giuliani were down in Pennsylvania. They had Trump on the cell phone, right? Well, our friends at Founder Sing did it again. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm going to send Progressive Voices off to a break. We'll be right back. Progressive Voices. Sorry, I just have to get the business in. so anyway, Founder Sing snuck one in on me. I didn't know that they had done this one. So I just saw it right before the show started. And it's only because it's, you know, Rudy Giuliani. So we'll enjoy this and then we'll come back with some thank yous. Okay? Take it away, Founders. I guess we're on a Billy Joel run today.
Gather round cameras, listen to me. My bullshit convincing the GOP. I scream at their fraud, though it's evidence-free. And won't shut up until I'm done. I got Sydney beside me, she freed Michael Flynn. Like my cousin Vinny, the verdict is in. We'll turn that a loser back into a win. So why are they making fun? Oh, don't let my hair dye run. Can't break a sweat. Loan me your hair dye, Trump. Don't let my hair dye run. Blame Dominion and Thoros and Christopher Krebs. Throw shit at the fan, just mess with their heads. Keep talking nonstop till democracy's dead. I got an audience of one. So come on, electors, and bow to your king. Screw all the voters and come kiss his ring. If I blow this case, then I lose everything. I look like a total chum. So don't let my hair die run. Whoa, 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 whoa. You gotta let me your hair die, Trump. Don't let my hair die run. I got a bright red tie and a sweaty smell. And the fact checkers can't prevent me spreading this misinformation. The true believers bit my stupid clients falling for the shit. Oh, 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 they say there's a hell made for gangsters like me who traffic in treason and conspiracies. Been promised a pardon, I'll get off scot-free. I better get paid up front. But don't let my hair die run.
Souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet. But their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
All right. I'm back, and we've got, I don't know, about a little less than 10 minutes left. And a couple of things, little housekeeping items I need to clean up. Yesterday, when Laffy was on, we were a bit irreverent, let me say, when we mentioned that David Dinkins had died. I am aware David Dinkins was the first and so far only African-American mayor of New York City. And for that alone, yes, he deserves recognition. I just remember David Dinkins was just a really shitty mayor. You know, he didn't do much for the city, although it is an accomplishment. He was the first black mayor of New York, and I shouldn't have been so my words aren't coming to me today. Shouldn't have been so glib about it. You know what? There's too much death today. And look, I'm happy for him. He lived a full life, as did his wife. They died at 89 and 93, respectively. And so, I'm glad that I'm able to correct that. I didn't mean to be glib about somebody dying. Look, there are somebody's parents and family, and although he was a shitty mayor, we found a lot of shitty mayors who get recognized. So I apologize for being glib and irreverent, though I'm usually irreverent and somewhat glib. Also, this week I've been talking a lot about my adoption of my daughter, Allison. It happened 20 years ago this week. It was Thanksgiving, which was yesterday, the 20th anniversary. And yesterday was the day that I took her out of the orphanage, 20th anniversary of that. And then today, look, there was a whole journal at NicoleSandler.com. If you go on the main navigation bar on the homepage underneath, under Nicole Sandler Show, probably doesn't belong there, is our journal. So you can you definitely, if you're interested, check that out. November is National Adoption Month, and it's one of the reasons I share our story, because there are children all over the world who really need a forever family. So best thing I ever did in my life. But when I was mentioning, I was doing a bit of a pity party, saying that this is the first time, you know, I adopted her 20 years ago. This is our forever day. This is bigger than a birthday. This is our day. This is, you know, our forever days. And this is the first time we're not together. And it, frankly, it hurts. You know, I miss her. But in my pity party, I somehow said, and I'm alone. Make no mistake, I'm not alone. I am so grateful. Not only do I have a wonderful daughter, but I've got an amazing husband. So I'm very lucky that, you know, I'm not alone. I know a lot of people are alone during this pandemic, and I can't even imagine what being alone at a time like this would be like. Instead, I have a loving, supportive, wonderful husband who wants just to love and protect me. And when I say I don't leave the house, except to go to the grocery, to the doctor. That's pretty much it. Maybe occasionally walk Jackson. Grocery shopping, David does it all. Prescriptions need picking up, David goes. He's at risk too. I mean, he's asthmatic and he's 7 years older than I am, but I'm a lung cancer survivor, missing most of my left lung. So he's very overprotective. And although I bitch at times that he's a bit too hovering, I really appreciate it. I am so lucky that I have an amazing husband who loves me and who, treats me the way a woman whose love deserves to be treated. So I am very, very grateful to him. David, thank you. I'm grateful that I get to do this, and I'm grateful to you for listening and participating, because after all, it's our democracy. You know, I've had a long career that's been a bit of a roller coaster. I've had the highest highs from, I produced two Radio Hall of Fame winning morning radio shows, one in New York, Jim Kerr and the Morning Crew on WPLJ, and Mark and Brian at KLOS in Los Angeles. I've got to be so creative and do things on the radio that never you would think were never possible. And I did all that, you know, over 20 years ago. I got to do great music radio. And we've seen how music radio has become more and more homogenized and generic over the years. I got to do it when this format called AAA, which stood for Adult Album Alternative, was at its peak in the mid to late 90s. And I got to do it in Los Angeles and break artists and play music and just have the interview everyone from Jackson Browne to David Byrne to... meet Elvis Costello, meet Burt Bacharach. I mean, I could go on and on for hours. Met Bruce Springsteen. There was a picture behind me. I've been able to do amazing things. And even now that the business has changed so much, and by changed, I mean been killed, the radio industry, I've been in radio since college. I studied broadcasting. My degree is in broadcasting. I started radio in college and never looked back. And the business is just a shell of what it once was. It's really horrible. So I'm grateful that this venue exists, that I can come on every day and do my own thing. Although I'm hobbled, I can't play music on YouTube. Ideally, I would love to do a hybrid talk music show so we can do a subject and I can break and go into a song that works for the moment. Can't do that on YouTube because of copyright issues. Maybe someday. But I'm so grateful that I can do this and that enough of you care to listen. I know we're not, the show is far from among the most popular. I see kids listening to classic rock music for the first time on YouTube and getting millions of views. I'm just happy that those of you who listen seem to really care. And I'll take quality over quantity. Because I got no choice anyway. I'm grateful that my kid is healthy. I'm sad she's not here today, but I'm grateful that she's working and she's a productive adult. And I raised an amazing young woman who I adopted 20 years ago this week. I'm grateful that Donald Trump lost. Oh, but I think about 74 million votes were cast for him. We're facing a wall of ugly out there. And when I see the refusal to recognize reality, it's very scary. I think the next 55 days, and I've got the countdown clock on the website, 55 days, 18 hours, 9 minutes, and 25 seconds from this moment, that's when Donald Trump will leave office. The countdown clock goes it's counting down to 12:03 on the afternoon of January 20th, because that's what time incoming President Joe Biden will take the oath of office and Donald Trump will be powerless. But I know that 74 million people voted for him, which I do not understand. We're a very divided country, and I'm afraid, frankly, of what the next few years are going to look like, let alone the next 55 days. But I'm also grateful that 80 million votes were cast against Trump. And I'm not saying that 80 million people came out and voted for Joe Biden. After all, he's not a cult leader, but he is the alternative to, if I were a religious person, I'd probably say the alternative to the Antichrist, because that's what Donald Trump is. And I think that accounts for maybe part of his popularity, says the person who knows nothing about religion. I'm grateful that we're still here. I'm grateful that the pandemic has brought out some inner talents in me. It got me to cook differently. I'm now mostly doing vegan cooking. I have to start posting more recipes on the recipe page on the website. I will. I promise I'll put at least one or two up this weekend. And then I've started painting. Never in a million years did I think I had any artistic ability. And I really don't think I'm as good as you guys are giving me credit for, but I so appreciate it. And I'm enjoying it, and it's a stress reliever. I'm grateful that we're able to do these things. I'm grateful that we still have some freedom and that there is some democracy left, and that we're not going to be subjected to a president or resident Donald Trump after 55 more days. Then the years after that. But I'm really grateful you're here with me to do it. Thanks for keeping me going, everyone. Because honestly, if I didn't have this outlet, I don't know what I'd be doing. With a 40-year career in radio, I can't get a job, so you're stuck with me. All right. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow, I hope you'll tune in for the music show, because it'll be a show of gratitude and great music. And we'll do something on Friday, too. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everybody. Most importantly, stay safe. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.